Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to tonight's town hall style public meeting between the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission and members of the community and surrounding areas. The NRC is an independent federal agency with the mission to license and regulate the nation's civilian use of byproduct, source, and special nuclear materials to ensure the protection of public health and safety, promote the common defense and security, and promote the environment. Tonight's meeting is designed to provide the community the opportunity to engage in a dialogue with the NRC to discuss views, information, concerns, and issues specifically related to the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. If you have specific comments or questions that you wish to address to PG&E, Mr. Pete Ressler, who's in the back of the room there, standing up, will be available to answer questions outside this meeting. My name is Vince Gaddy, and I'm the branch chief responsible for overseeing implementation of the NRC's safety inspection program at the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. With me tonight are Dwight Chamberlain, Michael Peck, and Tony Brown. Also with me tonight, we have other NRC officials. We have Vincent Watkins. Vincent is acting deputy director, Division of Reactor Projects, and Vincent is on loan from NASA. It's part of an executive exchange program we have. Also, we have Jessica Guzman. Jessica is an engineering associate summer student that's working with us this summer. And Agnes Chan. Agnes is the site secretary at the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. We also have Victor Drix. Victor is our public affairs officer. That's Victor. Also, there were no significant safety issues. All identified issues were of very low safety significance. And the Diablo Canyon plant operated throughout 2007 in the licensee response column of the NRC action matrix. And based on the 2007 annual assessment results, the NRC will perform baseline inspection at the Diablo Canyon power plant throughout 2008. Last year, baseline inspection involved approximately 2,500 hours of direct inspection by resident inspectors as well as NRC technical experts. And this inspection in 2008 included a sharp, focused inspection on steam generator replacement activities. As you're aware, on yesterday, July 1st, 2008, the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace presented their oral arguments to demonstrate the inadequacies of the NRC's final supplement to the environmental assessment for the proposed Diablo Canyon independent spent fuel storage installation. Since the litigation surrounding this issue is ongoing, we cannot answer questions related to the construction, licensing, or operation of this facility. As I mentioned earlier, the NRC staff will be pleased to entertain any other question that you may have related to the operation of the Diablo Canyon power plant. If we can't satisfactorily answer your question at this meeting, we will commit to provide you with an answer if you give us your contact information. Tonight's meeting is being videotaped by AGP Video and will be shown on your local channels as we have done for previous meetings. In addition, the NRC has provided feedback forms at the entrance to this meeting room. The NRC highly values your input, and we request that you complete feedback forms and send them in, or you could hand deliver them to us before you leave today. And again, if you have questions to which you would like a formal response, please include these questions on the feedback form as well as any contact information. A meeting summary will also be provided within 10 days. Included with the summary will be the attendance list that is available at the entrance to this room. If you haven't signed that attendance list, we appreciate it if you do that before you leave tonight. Also at the table are various brochures that describe the NRC's mission and what we do on a daily basis. This meeting will conclude no later than 8:30 p.m. The NRC staff will be available following the meeting if you have additional questions or comments. Based on questions and concerns we received from you.
I just want to say I appreciate the attendance here tonight. I appreciate the interest in this NRC's role in regulating Diablo Canyon. Our goal tonight is to hear and respond to any concerns or comments that you may have regarding the Diablo Canyon facility and to explain the NRC's role in oversight of licensee activities to ensure safety and security at the facilities. And it's Vince mentioned, we want to ensure that anyone that wants to speak is given the opportunity to speak. So I think Vince is going to turn it over to Tony Brown for that discussion.
At this time, I'd like to introduce our moderator for tonight's meeting. That's Mr. Tony Brown. And Tony will discuss the guidelines for conducting this meeting, and we'll then proceed directly into the question and comment period from the audience.
Thanks, Vince. Vince kind of went over a little bit of the format. With respect to the ground rules, if you'd like to speak, please just signal me. We're going to do it a little different than we did in the last couple of years. By request, we set up a podium. Once you signal, let me know, signal me, and I'll acknowledge you. At that point, you have an option. You can either come up to the podium and speak, or I can come to you, and I can bring the microphone. That way, if you don't want to travel up to the podium, you have that option. I ask that you keep your comments to 3 to 5 minutes. I'll probably let you know at the four-minute mark. You have a little bit of time left. And we'll plan on taking a short break after about an hour. I ask that only one person speak at a time. This will ensure that we all provide our full attention to whomever has the floor at the time, and this will eliminate any potentially distracting side conversations. If we don't get to everyone's questions tonight, or if you'd like additional contact at the NRC, please feel free to contact our public affairs officer, Victor Drix, at 1-800-952-9677. Once again, that's Victor at Drix at 1-800-952-9677. Are there any questions? It's a little hot. The air conditioning broke about an hour ago, so that's why the door is open. It's going to be warm. Any questions? Well, with that, let's begin the discussion.
Okay, well, I just wanted to clarify something. I initially said 2 to 3 minutes. Tony said 4 to 5, so we'll give you 4 to 5.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
With that, yeah, and depending on how the questioning's going, depending on how the meeting is progressing, there may or may not be a break period. So we'll just see how it's going. So, with that, any questions?
One first.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. You want to come up here?
The auditors and other nuclear professionals at Diablo Canyon Power Plant chose to be represented by a union, the Engineers and Scientists of California, Local 20, IFPTE. This brings the total number of nuclear professionals represented by ESC Local 20 at Diablo Canyon to almost 400 nuclear professionals. Our union represents a total of 2,500 engineers and other technical professionals throughout the PG&E system as well. The collective experience of the ESC Local 20 nuclear professionals in operating Diablo Canyon safely and efficiently is unparalleled. These professionals are the stewards of the plant's history, the design basis, system health, and quality. They care for the equipment, manage the processes in place, and protect the public. And these are professionals that were not predisposed to join a union. But under the circumstances, the great majority felt it was the responsible course of action for themselves and for the plant. They have a vested interest in this plant because they are not only employees, but they live here in this local community of San Luis Obispo with their families. In many ways, they are the public's permanent representatives at Diablo Canyon. They use their education, skills, and knowledge to manage conflicting priorities, technologies, and change. And this professional permanent plant staff is united in purpose, and they're now empowered through a vehicle, their union, by which to further ensure and enhance the safe and reliable operation of the plant. They're looking forward to the outcome of contract negotiations for the newly formed units and to the general contract negotiations that have already started. These professionals want to emphasize that their goals are to ensure that PG&E has the ability to ensure the safe, reliable operation of the plant for the duration of its existence, attract and retain highly skilled workers in a demanding nuclear job market, manage and facilitate the conscientious transfer of plant knowledge from retiring workers to newer workers, control costs for the ratepayers of California, and document conservative, high-quality operability determinations. This professional and permanent Diablo Canyon staff, members of our union, will work hard towards these goals with the plant leadership, as well as independently through their union. Our members own safety at Diablo Canyon. They own performance. They maintain the licensing and design basis of the plant. And they all look forward, as we all do, to improving Diablo Canyon. And we share the current management's stated goal of being the best plant in the nation. We'll continue to report our progress in this and other venues. And And thank you for your attention and consideration this evening and for being here with us at Diablo Canyon.
Thank you for your comments.
I would make one comment, too, that we also value the role of professional staff at Diablo Canyon. We often engage that staff, you know, asking questions about NRC regulations, and we appreciate the professionalism that you show at the plant. So thank you for that comment.
Who's next? You want to come up over?
I'm Richard Kransdorf. I just came 2 minutes ago. I certainly didn't think I'd be standing up here this quickly. 1 week ago today, my wife died. Today was the 19th anniversary of our marriage. She was a member of the Mothers for Peace, and she felt very keenly the issue of planned safety. I was going to stay home, but I thought my place was here, because I also feel very keenly the issue of planned safety. I was here about 6 months ago. I don't know if I honestly don't remember if you gentlemen were part of the panel at that time. And I talked about the issue of drills and how any plan in the absence of drills was a paper plan. And I said my piece, and somebody from the office of the County Office of Emergency Services stood up and said, well, we had a drill at one of the public schools last year and it went just fine. And I thought to myself, that's not a response. So I'm back here again, and I'm going to phrase it slightly differently tonight. What I said 6 months ago was that I am a recently retired professor at Cal Poly. I've been there for over 30 years. I said that for over 20 years and maybe longer, that we had never had a full-scale drill on campus, even though Monday through Friday, at least Monday through Thursday, there are as many as 20,000 people on campus during the daytime hours. And I said my piece, and the members of the panel listened. The person from the Office of Emergency Services stood up and said, well, we have something, we had a drill at one of the public schools, one of the grade schools, and that was that. So I'm back here this evening to make the same plea, and this time I'm going to say it rather differently. I'm going to ask you if you think it's appropriate that I realize the precedent this would set, because if this is an issue for Cal Poly, it's an issue for hundreds of other institutions throughout the United States, educational, hospitals, and on and on and on. But I'd like to ask each of you if you think it's appropriate that where there is a large concentration of people, that there be a plan and a test of that plan rather than just having something written on a piece of paper. Is it appropriate? And if so, will you make a commitment to seeing that a real test, and not by just people in a room somewhere and dealing with a by computer, but to actually see how it goes. I realize that the chances are 100 to 1. I'm not stupid. I realize the chances are 100 to 1 that such a test will ever be necessary. I know that. But I don't think that's the idea of what planned safety is about. It's about, in the event of an emergency, how will the authorities actually respond? Not on paper, not theoretically, but actually, how will it respond? And I submit to you, gentlemen, that in the absence of a test, and more than a paper test, that all of the work that you good people are doing is insufficient. And so I'm not sure if this is the time, if any of you would like to respond to my query of whether you feel that a test beyond a paper plan is necessary. And second, if you will so suggest to the powers that be at the NRC. Thank you very much.
Well, first of all, I want to say I'm sorry for the loss of your wife. I understand that's probably tough for you right now. But what we do at the NRC is that we have specific requirements that we have outlined that's specifically related to emergency preparedness. And part of that does involve licensees being able to demonstrate that they can adequately evacuate certain areas depending on whatever, you know, accident scenario. You know, we have data, I'm sorry, we have our 10-mile EPZ, the emergency planning zone. And not being from this area, I'm just not familiar with where Cal Poly is in relation to that 10-mile EPZ. Okay, I'm seeing some heads at that. It's probably not within the 10-mile EPZ. So, based on that, we essentially follow NRC rules and NRC regulations. Unless there's some specific change in governmental rules and regulations, then we could not require licensees to perform those type evaluations and evacuations.
I'm sorry.
Also, I would mention that it is, we coordinate with other federal agencies on off-site response, and FEMA has the responsibility for off-site response in conjunction with the county. So those decisions about what is done with off-site is really their responsibility, and we coordinate with them to ensure that those activities are carried out so that we can do our own site responsibility for activities at the plant. It may not be, it may not answer your question fully, but if you do have something further you want us to follow up on, we'll be glad to do it after this meeting.
Third gentleman, if you wish to respond.
Well, I might add that we do, in conjunction with other federal and state agencies, periodically exercise the emergency plan. In fact, one is scheduled for this fall, a full participation exercise, which includes not only us at the plant, but also our Region 4 Emergency Response Center, our headquarters in Bethesda, Maryland, Response Center be involved with, the actual commissioner will be involved with that exercise, as well as participation with local and state emergency preparedness. It will be we call it a full exercise. We do it periodically, but it is scheduled to come up this fall here at Diablo Canyon.
May I?
I think we've gone really as far as we can go. You're saying this is being adequately handled. 99 chances out of 100 we'll never find out. I think to have an unannounced exercise, and I realize you're saying, as I understand it, you don't have the authority to order anything else. I think that's a real flaw. I know those decisions are not made at your level. I think it's a real flaw, and I submit to this committee that they suggest that more be done than the way it's being handled now. The chances are this will be in the catacombs and never be resurrected. God forbid we're wrong. Thank you.
All right, thanks for your comment.
Thank you.
Tracy, did you have a comment?
Hi, my name is Tracy Vardis. I work with the Office of Emergency Services, and I believe I was the one who answered the gentleman last time that we were here. And at that time, and again, I'll state this one more time, is that we just don't have a community within the 10-mile emergency planning zone that would be willing to let us evacuate them for 8, 10, 12 hours while we fully exercised our ability to respond. However, coming in September on the 24th, and again on October 29th, we will have a full-scale exercise that will include Cal Poly, will include Cuesta College, it will include all of our cities within our expanded emergency planning zone. We don't actually have a city jurisdiction within our 10-mile emergency planning zone. It's all county property or Diablo property. However, we are having the cities that are within they're actually all the way down to 22 miles, are going to be participating fully with their staff, completely operational, firefighters, police officers, public works entities, and we'll be completely going over their plans and procedures and are going to be testing themselves more so than they have in the past. We're providing a scenario for them that will be very challenging and will allow them to see if they have the ability to fully respond to a power plant accident.
All right, thank you. Did that answer your question, sir?
Better than before.
Okay.
Not as good as I would like to see, but
okay.
Better than what I heard.
So all right, thank you.
My name is Joan Carter, and I'm an advocate of nuclear subsidies being redirected to energy efficiency and to new technologies. I think that your problem is that nuclear plants are not economically viable. With capital cost and risk, nuclear is really not an option. It costs too much, it takes too long, and reduces emissions far too little to be the answer. Alternatives don't make as much money for the investor-owned power plants, and the California Energy Commission study that's being done now may have information about those making money in this industry at the expense of public welfare. At a time when the country is close to bankruptcy with the money in foreign occupations and wars, we need to focus on sustainability and climate change. New nuclear power plants and maintaining old ones do not fit into a plan that can save our country from this economic crisis.
All right, thank you for your comment. Anyone else?
I can probably be heard. My name is Karen. I recently retired from the military. And my concerning question is, I have read with interest in the newspaper that large numbers of people in at Diablo Canyon are joining the union. And I wonder what the management team at Diablo Canyon has programmed for the future to deal with the number of union employees. That's my first question. My second question is, what is it in the climate at Diablo Canyon that is causing more people to join the union than in the past? So my first question is, what are you going to do, and how are you going to work with the union? What do you have set in 2008, 2009 to work with people in the union, number one? And number two, what work climate is causing more people to feel they need to join
them? Let me just comment on that. From the NRC's perspective, that's not something that we get involved with, whether there is a union or isn't a union. We do. What we get involved with is whether the plant's being operated safely and it's following our regulations and that the people there are qualified and trained to do their jobs. So if anyone wanted to comment on that, it would be PG&E, Mr. Ressler has offered to meet with anybody that would like to discuss those issues following this meeting or outside this meeting. Thank you.
Who's next?
Hi, my name's Jill Zamek. I'm with San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace, and I have two questions. Both of them have to do with the dry cask storage facility, so I hope you can answer them. The first one is, PG&E is still in litigation regarding its license to operate the dry cask storage facility. When may PG&E begin loading the casks? Is the license valid now, or when the issues are resolved and the proceedings concluded?
You just comment on that. As we mentioned at the beginning of this meeting, we're because of the ongoing litigation, we cannot answer questions related to the ISFI, and we don't have information on the licensee schedule. They can't load the cask until they get a license and get approval by the NRC, which they don't have yet. So I don't know what their schedule will be or when or if they will be loading this cask.
Well, that answered it. They don't have a valid license right now.
Right.
And the second question is, the Mothers for Peace received a notice that PG&E will not need to load the dry cask until the summer of 2009, and that's a delay, and I was wondering what caused the delayed time schedule.
Would you repeat that?
We got a notice from PG&E that they delayed their need for the dry cast storage to the summer of 2009.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that either.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Bob Smullen. I'm a local resident. What I like to find out, and I see it in your NRC publication here also, you're using the expression nuclear waste or spent fuel rods. And I wish that from now on the general public and the NRC and everyone that's involved with the nuclear industry would start referring to these things as nuclear byproducts or nuclear assets in lieu of nuclear waste, because these are an asset and they are a byproduct. And it gives a very negative connotation when the publications all say things like nuclear waste. These are very valuable assets. They can be reprocessed and used again.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Linda Seeley, and I live here in San Luis Obispo. I'm very happy to hear that PG&E is operating Diablo Canyon safely. It makes me able to sleep at night to know my next-door neighbor is a worker at Diablo, and I always am rooting for him to get a good night's sleep and perform well and all that, because our safety literally depends on a lot of you workers at PG&E. And so we've basically entrusted our lives and our children's lives to you, because we all know that with nuclear power, there's always a possibility of a nuclear release, of a release of radiation. What concerns me very much is the fact that, okay, so what I see is that we have all of this spent fuel asset accumulating in pools out there, and they're getting racked closer and closer together, I would think, because when you take an asset out of the core, it has to be put into the boron water, I think it is, to make sure it doesn't go into nuclear fission and cause an accident. So it's getting cramped, more and more cramped. And now we have this deal with the thing that we're not allowed to talk about, the casks, which is really kind of funny because you're here and that's the big issue, but we're not allowed to talk about it, but that's okay. So we've got the cask. We don't have the casks. We've got the pool. It keeps running and running. And there seems to be an attitude, I feel it, maybe it hasn't been explicitly said, but there seems to be an attitude like, well, the spent fuel or asset casks are going to be there. They're going to be approved, even though they are going to be lying in this bed. I was out there this year or so at the tour, so I saw what it looked like, where they're going to put it. And it is right out in the open. And I don't know. I think that the Mothers for Peace contention that it possibly would be vulnerable to a terrorist attack really makes a lot of sense. It's not some kind of, you know, spurious argument that they're making. Look what happened in New York, for God's sake, you know, that things happen. And to have these big casks there in this vulnerable place seems crazy to me. It really, really does. But and then Yucca Mountain probably isn't going to open. And even if it did, Diablo Canyon, from what I hear, would be one of the very last to be able to take its nuclear assets there because of our because we opened later than almost all of the plants, if I'm right. I'm right about that, I think, aren't I? So then we're going to have all this nuclear material hanging around here on our coastline if this thing goes through. I don't know. I know there's a huge business associated with this, and there's a lot of money. There's been a lot of investment. There are people who have their jobs who are very dedicated workers here. But somehow it seems to me that if we can look at this with clear eyes and with looking toward the future generations about what we're leaving for our grandchildren, that we really need to step back for a few minutes and think about it. We're living in a different world than we lived in 1950 when, you know, when nuclear power was just, you know, going to be too cheap to meter and all that. I mean, I can remember that very well myself and how exciting it was for people to think, oh, we'll be able to, you know, switch on a light bulb and it'll be, everything will be great, you know, because we won't even be paying for it. Everything, the meters will run backwards, yada, yada. It hasn't happened. It hasn't happened. The reality is that we're accumulating hundreds, if I'm right about this, hundreds of thousands of tons of highly radioactive assets in our country. As far as I know, nuclear reprocessing is not legal in the United States of America. Now, I know there's a push to do reprocessing, but it, you know, there's a, once you start reprocessing, it makes it much more vulnerable to being used in, by being stolen and used in nuclear weapons. It's all linked together. It's all connected, you know. Really, sincerely, I wish you would think about this. I know you have to keep your jobs, but I wish you would think about it and really consider it in your heart. I know it's time for me to quit. But I just want to say one more thing. Okay. And this is a formal thing. Jane Swanson from the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace attended the oral arguments before the Nuclear Regulatory Commission yesterday in Washington. She accused, well, not she, but our attorney accused the Nuclear Regulatory Commission staff of failing to address the catastrophic land contamination that could result from a terrorist attack on the proposed dry cask storage unit. Under questioning by the commissioners, the NRC staff admitted that the environmental study it had prepared did not address the consequences of an attack-induced fire and airborne release of cesium gas. The staff claimed to have assessed this policy in secret and to have dismissed it as too remote and too speculative to consider. Mothers for Peace attorney Diane Curran, assisted by expert witness Dr. Gordon Thompson, asserted that the NRC staff's extreme secrecy was not only illegal, but constituted poor policy. Ms. Curran argued that the NRC must publicly disclose the broad outlines of its environmental impact analysis of an attack on Diablo Canyon in order to ensure the agency's accountability to the public. And I totally agree with her. Thank you.
I just want to thank you for your comments. And again, I apologize for not being able to answer some of the questions related to the dry cask storage or any of the questions, I guess, this thing I can't talk about. But I do want to commend you. I thought you did a very good job on describing the national policy issue associated with waste and some of the issues facing our country and utilities in this country. So I thank you.
My name is June Cochran, and I wanted to, I talked to you this morning about, one of the things was a boat that we saw on the tour, and I got a lot of PG&E people right after I talked about it, asking what date, which really surprises me, because you would think that there would be a report, a safety report, a security report on it. Because it was witnessed by 20 of us who were taking the tour. I was wrong in that it was not an OSHA tour. It was actually a tour provided by the plant, and it was on June 13th, 2007. The tour started at the PG&E Resource Building at 8 o'clock, and we saw the boat going in, and somebody asked about it, and they said, oh, it was probably something, a PG&E vessel. And then when we still saw it on the way out, we saw a Coast Guard person come up, and they said, oh, yeah, you know, that shows that our security is working. Well, an hour is a long time for a boat to be out there. The other thing that I wanted to make sure that people in this audience knows, because there were very few people here in the afternoon, is that there is a no-fly zone there, and planes regularly go over. Head. And when we asked about that, she said, don't worry, Lompoc is just a few minutes away and fighter jets are there. But you know, and I know, that if there were one, two, three, four planes coming in and wanted to do something, they could get it done before those jets got there. I too, like Linda, was very mystified by putting those casks out on a pad. And they're not this high. They're 20 feet high. There's 20 of them on a pad together, even though the manufacturer says that they should be located and dispersed throughout the facility. And certainly Diablo Canyon has a lot of land. They should also be under berms. They were out in the open, right above the spent fuel sails, within eyesight of the ocean. That, to me, is very dangerous. And I, too, read the New York Times article about what happened yesterday and the commission. And there were a couple of things that hit me. One was that that it could be, the nuclear power plant could be hit with incendiary missiles, piercing the steel and concrete shell and lighting the metal cladding of the fuel. If that happened, the fire could turn radioactive cesium into a gas, which would float widely with the wind and then resolidify. And what we're hearing is that don't worry about it because a 5-mile radius is all we have to be concerned with. Well, that's just not true. It's a much wider area, and if this happens, we are going to have ramifications in agriculture and all sorts. Property owners are going to lose their property, and it's going to be uninhabitable, et cetera. The commissioner, I found interesting, Mr. Yasko, asked how the staff would assume that the risk was low if it could not assign a numerical value to the likelihood of an attack. And the council said the staff's judgment based on their experience. Mr. Yasko responded, so we're down to the staff's belief that this probably isn't going to happen. Well, that's pretty disturbing. And I don't see any alleviation for this. When I went to the safety commission, a committee meeting, not last week, but the year ago, Mr. Peterson said something that was really interesting. He said the technology in the older nuclear power plants like Diablo Canyon is like driving an automobile without an airbag. And these spent fuel cells are in a pool that are very, very dense right now, much more dense than they were designed to hold. That's a safety factor right there. And I know that you got all green this year, right? There were no white, yellow, nothing else, right? Am I right? Okay. But in the past, there have been quite a few violations, and there are accidents that are going to happen, and we need to be prepared for them, and I don't think we are.
Before we take the next question, the people that are standing in the back, there are some open chairs up here if you'd like to move up. Okay, thank you.
Good evening. My name is Klaus Schumann. I'm from Paso Robles, living about 23 miles as a crow flies from the plant. And, well, we heard already this evening a lot of concern about the nuclear waste accumulating even as we speak at the plant. It's getting more and more and more, and I certainly do share many of those concerns. It seems to be to me that the NRC has a kind of attitude, well, what is being built there is safe enough. My question would be to you, does not this community deserve the safest means possible? And that's not what's happening there right now. And why would they deserve it? Let's put this question to you. The history of nuclear waste at this plant is full of false premises and full of broken promises. I mean, if you go back to the licensing time, the premise was it would stay just 5 years and then it would be going to a reprocessing plan. As we know, that plan has been scrapped. In 1986, re-racking was done. There the promise was, well, by 1998 latest, we would be shipping out the waste to Yucca Valley or to some proper place to be created at the time still. Well, 1998 has long passed, and meanwhile, the waste is accumulating in pools that were designed for a much, much smaller amount originally, creating the possibility of a fuel fire, which would be, according to NRC studies, your own studies, you know, could be very catastrophic for the community or for the county. And, of course, the possibility of a spent fuel pool fire could be eliminated altogether if we simply return to what was originally promised to the community, low-density pools. But apparently you're not pursuing that. You believe what we have now is safe enough. Well, when the licensing of a cast occurred a few years ago, there we were promised, I think 2012 was the date being mentioned then, that PG&E was thinking to be able to ship the waste to Yucca Mountain. At the time was then the last option left anyhow. So here we are today. We have about, I think already 6 or 7 times the amount of waste accumulating in the pools, no end in sight, and also no time period really in sight. And I wanted to read you very short article, actually, from the local newspaper, the Tribune, from February 20th. The Under Nation Roundup on page A4. There's a little article under the heading Las Vegas. And there it says, the top official overseeing the proposed Yucca Mountain nuclear waste dump says he cannot say when the project will open anymore. The department had planned to open by 2017, but Ward Sproat says it has now abandoned that goal. Well, how shall we take it here, the community? No, it looks like the waste is continue to accumulate. The NRC has taken the approach, well, what we have is safe enough. Even though it was originally only meant for 5 years, for I think about 540 spent fuel assemblies, now we're looking at thousands of spent fuel assemblies in the pools already. this additional danger, which wasn't there before, of a pool fire. And still is no way in sight where this waste goes. Even the top officials say they cannot say anything. I think, does not this community deserve, under those circumstances, which are very different now than they were when the plant was licensed, the safest possible means? And some of them were outlined by my previous speaker. Earthen berm, Bangkok casts, and those kind of things. Not only a chain link fence, that doesn't do much for air attacks, I would say. The question is, does not our community serve the safest means? Thank you very much.
I did want to make a comment on Yucca Mountain. We had a question regarding Yucca Mountain and where we are with any potential licensing process for Yucca Mountain in the earlier meeting today. And Department of Energy has submitted an application to NRC. That's been a long-standing public policy issue, national policy issue about when DOE was going to move forward and submit an application. That was done in June. NRC process calls for the NRC to do first an acceptance review of that application, which really is just to see if that application is complete enough that they can conduct a licensing review of the application. Understand that acceptance review will take about 3 months, 90 days. Then following that review, if the NRC determines that application is complete enough for them to review for determining whether a license can be issued, then by law, NRC has 3 years to complete a licensing review. Understand they can also, NRC can also go back to Congress if they need additional time and request an additional year to complete that review. So it could take as long as 4 years to complete a licensing review for Yucca Mountain. My understanding, and I don't know what you've read about, when they might, earliest they could have fuel taken to Yucca Mountain, but I understand they've stated it earliest they could receive fuel at Yucca Mountain would be 2020 is what I've heard. So I just wanted to provide that status to you on Yucca Mountain. Thank you. Let me just comment. I don't know how many senior executives live in a 10-mile EPZ for a nuclear power plant. We do have senior residents and residents that often live. Are you within a 10-mile EPZ, Michael?
I reside at Avila Beach, which I believe is about 10 miles from the power plant.
And as far as executives for the company, I don't have any information on that either, where they might be located, where they might live.
Good evening. My name is Morgan Rafferty. I'm with the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. And as you probably know, we filed an allegation with the NRC earlier this year because we were hearing some concerns from the employees at the plant about the way they were being treated. And we heard that many of them had joined a union. And we know that these are the professionals at the plant who are most interested in making sure that the plant is operated safely. And so, of course, we're very concerned when they're concerned about not being feeling like they are not able to do their jobs in the way that they think they should be able to. And so this afternoon, I went to the NRC website and looked at the statistics on allegations. And I was really kind of shocked to see that already in the first 5 months of 2008, there were 8 on-site allegations filed at Diablo Canyon, when in every year, or the last 4 years before that, there were only 2 in each year. So I'm wondering, as independent regulators, if these sorts of things indicate any trends, or cause you any concerns, what you might think when you look at this sort of thing, because it sounds, when you just look at these numbers, it seems a little alarming.
Let me just comment on that first. I would comment on the letter that you sent to NRC that was made public through the news media.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a process for receiving allegations from individuals that may have concern, and we try to keep the identity of those people, you know, do not reveal the identity of those people so they can be anonymous if they want to. So we don't know who provided this information. What we did ask if you had any information on who provided these concerns, if they wanted to come speak to us, there is a process where they can do that, mm-hmm. and we'll address their concerns directly to them. We do plan to address the concerns you provided in your letter to us, and we're in the process of doing that right now. We are conducting inspections. The other thing about the number of allegations, mm-hmm. we have seen an increase, and we do monitor that. And we often, when we see trends like that, we often meet with licensees or ask them to come in and talk with us about their processes, you know, for dealing with concerns at the facility. We haven't gotten to that point yet with Diablo Canyon, but we have noticed the upward trend in allegations at Diablo Canyon. So it's something we're monitoring.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Lynn Levine, and I live in San Luis Obispo, and I am a member of Mothers for Peace. And I must admit that I was never happy about Diablo Canyon being built 8 miles from where I live on the Hodge Creek earthquake fault. But it was built, and we were promised that nuclear energy was cheap or inexpensive and was safe. And I must say that I am very disappointed in not having either of those promises fulfilled. As we've heard tonight, there are lots of questions about the safety of Diablo Canyon in our community. And certainly, I don't know what your utility bills are, but mine have been going up rapidly. So is there any way that you can fulfill some of the promises that were made to us when Diablo Canyon was built here? Thank you.
Let me just comment. Cost is not something that we promise about nuclear power. One thing we do hope we can fulfill, and it's our role to fulfill, is to ensure the safety of nuclear power. And that's our role as Region 4 inspectors and staff, role of our inspectors at the site, and we take that role very seriously. And the safety of those plants is very important to us, so thank you for your comments.
Can you comment on what possibility there is of reprocessing spent fuel, if that's from energy cost or space incentive?
As you might know, that reprocessing was taken away as an option for the United States back in the Carter administration. So it would take an act of Congress, is my understanding, to make a decision whether the United States wanted to consider reprocessing in the future. I do understand that some members of Congress, some senators, may be looking at that option again, but it would take an act of Congress to change that. And other countries do reprocess nuclear fuel and do it safely, I understand.
Is the motivation because of cost, or what is the motivation behind reprocessing? What is the motivation behind reprocessing?
For not reprocessing?
For reprocessing.
Or reprocessing. Motivation for reprocessing would be you would reduce, you would recover that asset that someone talked about earlier. There is an asset there. When you reprocess fuel, you get back uranium that can be used again to power nuclear reactors and recover that. Secondly, you significantly reduce the amount of highly radioactive waste, the volume that we're talking about. So you may still have to have a storage for high-level waste, but it would be significantly reduced in the amount of high-level waste that you have to store. I think someone mentioned earlier the reprocessing, and that's the reason I think back in the Carter administration was concerns about proliferation of plutonium that you do produce plutonium from that process, so that would have to be dealt with in the security sense and safety sense. Thank you.
Who's next? That's okay.
I'm Ken Schrader. I live in San Luis Obispo, and I'm a nuclear engineer. I work at Diablo Canyon, and I've heard a lot of statements today about the nuclear plant and the concerns, and so I just wanted to point out that there's a very good book that came out about a year ago. It's by Gwyneth Cravens, and it's called Power to Save the World, and she was originally is a writer. And she originally, I guess 20, 30 years ago, was an anti-nuclear activist protesting plants. And but she had a friend that was worked in the nuclear industry. And on a challenge to him, she spent 10 years investigating nuclear power. She went to the original research reactors that were built back in the 50s that were used to do testing for the design of the plants that we have today. She went to uranium mines where the uranium is extracted for the fuel that we use. She also went to other two nuclear reactors themselves and did tours, and also went to other electrical production facilities so that she had a comparison. And the book it has a very good index in it. It contains a lot of accurate information about nuclear energy and also information about the other electric sources that we have, the comparisons. I'll be available after the meeting if anybody would like to come and look at the book or get the information. But I've been in the industry for about 20 years, and I learned a lot from this book. It's got a lot of really good information. And I've heard a lot of comments tonight about people essentially making claims that if we shut down Diablo Canyon, that we're going to be safe and everything's going to be okay. But I think if you look at what the alternatives are, you're going to find out that that's really not the case. Nuclear energy produces 20% of the electricity in the United States right now. The other 70% is pretty much coming from coal plants, 50%, and natural gas, the other 20%. So that 70% of our electricity production is producing global warming gases. And those are using fossil fuels that are not going to be around forever and have other uses. So if we shut down the nuclear plants, that electricity has to come from somewhere else, because people want electricity 24 hours a day, and you're not going to get that from solar plants. You're not going to get that from windmills. So we need to get it from some other place if we do shut down the nuclear plants. And the final thing I'd like to say is, in the 20 years that I've spent working at plants, I believe they're very safe. They've been designed very well from the beginning so that that they're safe in the first place. And I've really enjoyed my career, and I'm very happy and proud to work at Diablo Canyon. Thank you.
Who's next?
I have a second try.
Nobody else wants to go?
Okay. To counterbalance that book, I've got a smaller book. It's called Why a Future for Nuclear Industry is Risky. And the people who wrote this are the former chair of the New York State Public Service Commission, the former chair of the Maine Public Utilities Commission, and the former commissioner of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So they have credentials also. Some of the features of this are investments in nuclear power plants remain very risky. Wall Street has expressed serious concerns. Nuclear power plants are stated terrorist targets. Weaknesses in Nuclear Regulatory Commission, oversight. Nuclear power will not reduce U.S. foreign energy dependence, and permanent storage of spent nuclear fuel cells unresolved. What about global warming? So if anybody would like to see me after and take a look at this, I'll be glad to share this with you. And I wanted to respond to what Mr. Chamberlain said about Yucca Mountain, because I think saying that the application process is going to take 4 years and possibly it will come online by 2020 is short-sighted, because basically that's when it would come online if everything goes right and all these plants that are storing their fuel have to stand in line to be the first ones to go into it. And there's already a list from what I understand, and Diablo Canyon is very far down the list. So it would be many more years before we could get rid of our fuel. Also, the dry cask, the casks only have a warranty, I think, of 20 years. That's what I heard. They said that they'll probably stay okay for 40 years. But one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and I don't know if you can answer it, probably not, but I wanted to know, okay, what happens in 20 years or 40 years, and how do you tell when the integrity is gone, and what are you going to do with the fuel that's inside that cask at that point? Are you going to move it to another cask on another pad on the side, or are you going to transport it someplace? What's going to go on with that? And then one other point that I wanted to make was I forgot about the fact that these dry casks are supposed to be very safe. I have just two examples I want to share you. There's a lot of them, though. Hydrogen gas explosion within a dry cask at the Point Beach nuclear power plant in 1996 was forceful enough to dislodge a 4,000-pound cask lid several inches ajar. So those are other concerns that we have. Can you answer the one about the warranty when it wears off? And
I know I sound like a broken record, but I can't comment on that. Let's go for a little longer. So.
I had a reassuring conversation with Michael Peck earlier. He explained a lot of things about how the safety features of the plant work, which really assured me about the capability of the plant to withstand an earthquake up to a 7.3. I really did not previously understand all the engineering safety features and how the fuel rods drop back down into the core automatically with the magnets that hold them in place. And a lot of that actually sounded pretty good to me. However, I feel like I need to spend about 6 hours talking to you, Michael. You really cast a lot of light on different things, and I don't want to wish I'd had more time prior to this meeting to go into more detail. But what I'm not convinced of is that, I think he's convinced that nuclear is safe. I'm not convinced that a 7.5 earthquake is impossible. We're within 5 kilometers, the plant's within 5 kilometers of a major fault line. I'm not convinced that we can predict with any certainty that there is going to be a permanent repository at Yucca or anywhere, because that's a very politicized process, and we see that going on and on and on. I remember reading about Yucca in the early 80s, and they were thinking that they'd have something open in 12 years. I'm sure you've all heard that sad story before, but I don't think that political process is going to change. There's always going to be a not-in-my-backyard approach to having a repository located in a specific community. Nobody wants that problem. In the meantime, the casks, as I heard from somebody on the NRC panel that was here last year, are designed for a 20-year life. That's what we were told. I specifically asked. And that the waste will be radioactive and dangerous for hundreds of thousands of years. I inquired at the time as to whether or not there was a can opener that came with the can. And so I specifically inquired about FMEAs. And the last hearing, I was really surprised to hear that nobody at the panel had an engineering degree, I don't think, because they didn't know what FMEAs were. And they all kind of looked at each other and said, well, you know, what, you want to take that one? It was very disconcerting to have members of the NRC telling us we shouldn't worry about anything, but they didn't know what a failure modes and effects analysis was. I'm not convinced that we are safe from potential terrorist attacks. I don't buy the argument that we can't talk about that because that's national security. I don't buy that. I think that's too big an out, too big a loophole. That's exactly the thing that we should be talking about publicly. None of us have to worry about anybody in this room trying to hatch a plan to, you know, attack the power plant, and that's why we can't talk about it. I think what we can know with absolute certainty, I think everybody in this room may not want to believe this, but they know in their heart that it's true, that somewhere in the world there is some fanatic idiot that has a map with all the nuclear power plants in the United States on it. And they're looking at all the possible targets and which ones are the most exposed and how they can get to them and what kind of device they have to use to actually crack a cask open. So we know that we have enemies in the world that may be clusters of enemies in certain countries of the world that specifically are hatching a plan to do this. We know this with absolute certainty in my mind. Every person in this room knows this, okay? So to not talk about the failure modes and effects analysis of what happens to a cask when a certain size gun hits it or a certain type of weapon attacks it, to me, is insanity. I'm sure that people are talking about that in closed rooms, but we live here. I have a house that's 15 minutes downwind when the wind starts blowing, and it does every afternoon. The air that's at Diablo gets to my house in 15 minutes. I want to know these answers. I don't think that it's irrational to demand discussion of this. I think it's completely rational to demand discussion of it. I think it's irrational to discourage discussion of it or to hide behind on the road. We have to be able to defend a nuclear power plant. I'm not a member of any environmental group. I'm an American that believes that the individuals of this community have a democratic right to choose for ourselves whether we want a nuclear power plant in our community. That right should not belong to the NRC. It should not belong to Congress. It should not belong to the CEC or the PUC or any other governing agency. I believe that there should be a referendum or an initiative on the ballot for everybody that's within 50 miles of this plant and let us decide whether this plant gets relicensed, because we're the ones that are affected by this. Not Sacramento, not Washington. It's unfair and it's un-American to impose this on this community. And if you guys really wanted to open this discussion up and do this in the American way, you would let us decide whether we're comfortable enough with this, because it's my children and my grandchildren that are affected by something like a Chernobyl accident. Whether or not that's a reality in your minds, it's a reality in our minds. There are alternatives. Lewis Solar Thermal Plant in 1992 was operating within 1 cent per kilowatt hour the cost of coal. And I spoke with the CEO of that corporation, and that plant's still in operation today. That's my last comment. And if we achieved economies of scale with solar thermal power, one plant about 100 miles by 100 miles in the Mojave Desert would power the entire country. There's no reason we need nuclear. Not a single reason to take that kind of chance with future generations and the lack of solutions with highly radioactive waste storage. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate those comments on the policy issues facing the nation and the issues you have in your local community. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My name is David Weissman, and since you have perhaps inadvertently provided the greatest moment of comic relief of the evening with your inability to actually discuss the very issue that is most eyed organization, and I'd like to talk to you briefly this evening about a subject which is not preempted by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. In fact, there's a Supreme Court decision that the PG&E executives will know of as the Sun Desert case, which makes that so. And what it says is that we in the state have the right to discuss power on the issues of economy, economics, and reliability. How many megawatts, where, and how much? That is completely within our purview as citizens of the state of California. And in fact, it appears that our local elected representative, Assemblyman Sam Blakesley, appears to believe that is also the case. For it was 2 years ago that he passed, or got passed, with only one no vote, Assembly Bill 1632, which mandates that our California Energy Commission conduct a full top-to-bottom, cradle-to-grave, cost-risk-benefit analysis of nuclear power on the issues of economics and reliability to determine whether it is worthwhile to proceed beyond the license of Diablo Canyon to plan ahead for the subsequent 20, 40, and 60 years in our state's electrical generation and energy needs. It's a very interesting study because none has ever been undertaken by a state, and that makes it a first. While there have been many individual studies on the subject, there has never been a meta-study which will be incorporating all this data. Now, the first draft of that study is supposedly going to be out sometime later this summer. What the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility would like to invite the concerned citizens of San Luis Obispo to do is participate with us in this study, in monitoring the study, in evaluating the study, in taking a good look at it and making sure that all our concerns for the possible costs and implications of nuclear power are actually covered and evaluated in this study. We'll be looking at a large draft of a report. We will invite people to join with us in taking pages, chapters, sections of that report, taking them apart and looking through them with your yellow highlighter pen and helping us do the work of citizens in this country. We'd also like to say that, you know, on the issue of economics, again, we're looking forward in this state. What will be the case 20 years from now? And reliability. For example, we heard issues raised about seismic concerns, and I will not necessarily discuss the science of earthquakes or earthquake prevention now, only to remind everyone that just about a year ago next week, an earthquake rocked Japan. And that earthquake caused a massive amount of damage at a nuclear plant to be placed back online again. This has meant for a year the Japanese have had to buy very expensive imported power from other sources. Now again, the people tend to think of an earthquake and one thinks of the safety ramifications, but we are looking at the economic ramifications. If one places many, many eggs in one basket and the basket is rattled and the eggs break, where would you be? These are the kinds of questions we are hoping this study will look at for the long term. And so the Alliance for Nuclear Responsibility, whose website is www.a4nr.org, again, invites people to join and help us participate in this. There's also good news here. There's a great opportunity as the state looks ahead to the next 20, 40 years of power to ask the question, how is this good for San Luis Obispo County? How could it even be good for PG&E? The burgeoning business, as we just heard the previous speaker mention, of alternative energy, of thin film solar panels, of wind, may be an opportunity. As I recall, in the late 1990s, many of the people of San Luis in government and industry were looking forward to us becoming the next Silicon Valley. A lot of talk of the infrastructure, and then the dot-com bubble burst, and that all kind of went away. Well, the question here would be, what can this pose for San Luis? How can we become a center of that new energy? How can PG&E possibly be involved in generating those jobs in the new technologies? The nuclear power is kind of like today's SUV, and the other stuff is sort of like the Prius, and one of them are moving off the lots really fast now, and others are sticking around. You know some executives at GM are really probably upset at the sarcastic remarks that were made earlier. No, I'm completely ready for this. It's great. It's sort of like having the Grim Reaper. I mean, he's just missing the black cloth and the sickle, but it's kind of like that. So that's what we hope will happen, that people will join the alliance. We'll look forward to this study, which is due out, at the cost, risks, and benefits of nuclear power. And not to belabor many points, but to correct one thing, and I guess the history books would show this, reprocessing was banned by Gerald Ford during the Ford administration. And I'm not trying to say, it was actually, and in fact it was relayed to me by the person who was serving on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission at the time, Mr. Peter Bradford, when I spoke with him last month in San Antonio, Texas. You may check the history books. The actual legislation was signed under the Ford administration before Jimmy Carter had actually taken the office as President of the United States. And so I would just like to correct that amount, and thank you for your attention and time this evening.
Appreciate that.
The kind of earthquake that would devastate the Yellow Canyon, there would be no more houses. Everything would be flat. So just keep that in mind, that your house would not be standing, but Yellow Canyon would still be.
So I just would there be a radioactive release?
No, there would not be a radioactive release. Even if they did, because. Oh, well, that's all I just wanted to say. That was my opinion on it, that when you're considering natural disasters, you have to apply that to other people, not just people. So the gentleman who was just speaking mentioned that Japan was without power, or they had to purchase really expensive power. Well, if we were dependent on solar or wind, we would be without energy either way. So that's just one thing that I want people to consider. Also, it kind of irritates me when I hear people bring up Chernobyl when they're talking about nuclear power plants in the United States, because the possibility of a Chernobyl-type accident happening in the United States is non-existent. They're just completely differently designed, and there are numerous safety features that are built into these power plants that would, aside from the safety features, there are just fundamental differences in the way that these power plants are designed that a Chernobyl type accident could not happen in a U.S. nuclear reactor. And so I guess that's all I have to say.
Hello, my name is Bob Wolf. I'm a retired math professor from Cal Poly. Since people have started to bring up seismic issues, I wanted to ask you about something that's disturbed me for a long time and I've never gotten an answer to that has satisfied me. My understanding is that when, and I assume some of you have been around long enough to remember this, my understanding is that when Diablo Canyon was being planned and before the discovery of the aliveness, so to speak, of the Hosgree Fault, the seismic study done by, I guess, the USGS estimated that the largest quake that could occur near Diablo would be likely to produce an acceleration of up to 0.2 Gs at the plant. They do it in terms of Gs, of course, rather than Richter scale, since that's the actual force at the plant. Trying to beef the plant up in its specifications from the 0.4, which was the double design earthquake under the original design, to withstand the 0.75 Gs. And what disturbed me very much and sort of turned me into a cynic about the NRC, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the double feature was abandoned. The goal of having the plant strong enough to withstand 1.5 Gs, double the design of the new, was abandoned, presumably because it was deemed virtually impossible to achieve. And that struck me as very sort of hypocritical and a little bit dishonest, and it's bothered me ever since. And if any of you can clarify what I'm missing about that, I'd be very curious to know about it. Thank you.
I don't fully know the history of that issue. I know Michael did a little review on the seismic design. If you have any comments you want to make, Michael.
Well, only that I'm in agreement with your numbers. I don't know the thought process that went behind the acceptance of the 0.75 G acceleration for the Hosgree design. I know that the decision was made at the time of licensing, and when the plant was licensed in 84, not to use a double design basis earthquake for that particular ground acceleration. I don't know what the reason, the rationale behind that was. I do know that the plant was retrofitted in the time frame between the original design, which we talked about, point two and point four. A lot of retrofitting was done for the plant to safely shut down without a radiological release with the 0.75 G. But why it didn't go beyond that, I don't know the answer to that.
I'm just wondering if that disturbs you at all, that the double feature was kind of just shuffled away. Either of you, Mr. Beck.
It doesn't disturb me personally, but the seismic qualification is not my area of expertise. I don't have a background in that. My understanding is, not being a seismic person, my understanding is the plan is designed to safely shut down without a radiological release in the maximum predicted earthquake. And there's also a commitment on the part of both the NRC and PG&E to the long-term seismic program, which is to continuously reevaluate the seismic design basis based on any additional information that's gleaned from future seismic events. For example, the Sam Simeon.
Is the current rating 0.75 Gs, and what does that equate to in the Richter scale?
Well, I believe that the Hosgrohe earthquake is predicted to be about a 7.2 magnitude earthquake, and that corresponds. Of course, there's a frequency response associated with that horizontal ground movement, as well as periodicity of that particular ground acceleration, and that's what's considered within the seismic design of the structures, both from a piping perspective as well as a building perspective, to withstand that particular ground acceleration.
Does that mean it's rated to sustain a 0.75 ground acceleration? I'm not sure I understand. So the plant is rated to do that?
My understanding is that the seismic design is the plant has been designed to withstand that ground acceleration and safely shut down without a radiological release.
Anybody else?
Okay. Without hearing any additional questions or comments, I'd just like to thank you all for coming out tonight. We realize that we weren't able to answer a lot of your questions, but there's a reason for that, and we discussed that earlier. But again, I appreciate you coming out. I appreciate your comments. And with that, the meeting's closed. Thank you.